Welcome back, Aspiration Athletics listeners. This is your host, Devin Burnison, and we're here on episode 29. And today we're going to be discussing the ideas behind how we want to approach training for aesthetics and kind of the six-pack look versus how we want to approach our training when considering athletics and performance and how we are able to conduct ourselves in a training environment when we have a competitive goal in mind that is in the realm of sport. So as usual, folks, this is your place, your one-stop shop for fitness professionals, fitness enthusiasts, anybody in the fitness space looking to build their knowledge and competency and training principles and fitness application. So thank you for joining us. If you find any value out of our show today, or maybe you've listened to other episodes and you enjoy listening to the podcast, go ahead and drop a donation. That helps us keep the podcast running and really helps us continue to strive for better on the podcast, bringing in guests, bringing on really special people who are in the fitness space and can shed a lot of perspective and insight on the industry. So thanks for everybody for joining us. I really think that I'm experienced to talk about this personally because I've been subjected to training as a bodybuilder, not just in a from a recreational standpoint, but in a competitive standpoint. I trained under Carl Jackson, who is the head coach of Team Juggernaut. When I started with him, this was kind of a smaller base club, smaller team, and it consisted of maybe, 100 people or less. And, within the last few years, since I've taken a step back from Team Juggernaut, Carl Jackson, hats off to him, has really been able to grow that team into not just bodybuilding, but other sports and other athletic ventures and just business facets. So again, hats off to Carl Jackson. Team Juggernaut has really been a huge contribution to my knowledge and kind of what I would consider my experience in bodybuilding. So a lot of good things that came from Team Juggernaut in that experience working under Carl Jackson. Guy knows exactly what he's doing. With his guidance and provision, we were able to start at 230-plus pounds, 20% body fat, bringing me all the way to single-digit body fat numbers, as well as stage readiness in competition on a classic physique platform. So being that I have been a competitor through a good portion of my life, and even throughout a portion of my life competing at a high level on a national stage, I've been exposed to some really high level athletes, high profile athletes that have gone on to do some incredible things at a national and even a world level. So I'm really excited to shed some insight and perspective on my experience and what I've gathered in that space of working around and training and even being a part of some of the most talented group of athletes and just those that are competing at such a high level and have the performance markers of world-level athletes. So really excited to dive into this one, folks. I really think there's a lot of perspective to be gained on how we want to look at approaching each of these schools of thoughts behind training. So go ahead, buckle in, take a seat. If you're on your commute, go ahead and settle in because we've got a good episode in store for us today. Let's go ahead and dive right in, folks. So what we're going to be kind of looking at first here is talking about aesthetics, kind of the approach and how we want to conduct ourselves when we're looking at training to be in the best physical appearance possible, right? So like we're talking eye-catching, that typical lean-bodied, you know, beach body kind of look that a lot of people seem to be striving for in a recreational sense of just being able to feel good about being in our skin, right? Feeling confident, feeling sexy. So I attribute this to more of a bodybuilding style of training. And I think a lot of people and a lot of trainers would even argue that, and that's okay. But in my experience, working out and training in a bodybuilding atmosphere, being in classic physique competitive space, I've been around that idea of, you know, wanting to be beach body ready, wanting to be, tapered, considering, you know, how we want our abs to look. These are all very specific details that are related to the physique nature of how we approach training. So I'm going to be talking a little bit about first what we need to think about when we are trying to orient our goals towards this aspect of looking aesthetically appealing. Not to say that we can't acquire those same outcomes with performance training, but if we're focused on really trying to be the leanest we can and maximizing lean body mass in muscular size versus performance markers, then we're going to be able to optimize that look that you're aspiring for. So how I view this point of training is it's more of an isolation approach. And what I mean by that is that we want to take small groups of muscles or maybe even isolate a particular muscle and really work to break down that muscle. So in a bodybuilding type of approach of training, when you're thinking about aesthetics and you're thinking about trying to look the best you can, we need to build that muscle in size. So this is kind of where hypertrophy comes in. And hypertrophy is simply stating that the muscle is going to be broken down, and at the end of this hypertrophy phase, the muscle is going to regenerate, and the muscle fibers will come back bigger, they will come back fuller, overall increasing the size of the muscle. So we take an approach in this sense of training by proportionately planning to train specific muscle groups, not large groups of muscles like you would typically see in a powerlifting background or maybe even preparing for sports. You see lots of guys deadlifting. That's not really what we're looking for here in an aesthetic sense. When we're thinking about appearance of the muscle, we need to be able to isolate that muscle. So this bodybuilding approach of training, we can really look at it as taking a small group of muscles. So taking that scope of looking at our entire body and maybe isolating the pecs and the triceps, or maybe just isolating the biceps, or maybe just isolating the deltoids. Like taking a small group of muscles or a particular muscle group, breaking it down, isolating that muscle, working within sets of 4 by 12 at about 7 out of 10 intensity. So what that means is 12 repetitions by 4 sets, right? And this is just a general guideline of how I would approach hypertrophy training if I were just starting in the gym and trying to focus on my aesthetic goals. 4 sets of 12 repetitions at about 70% of your overall effort. Okay, so we want to think about, as we conduct ourselves in this training session, whether it's a bicep curl, whether it's a bench press with dumbbells, whether it's a chest fly, whether, you know, whatever exercise you're doing with this 4x12, make sure you've got good tension being produced in the contraction of the muscle. What people seem to misunderstand when it comes to hypertrophy goals is that we're not focusing on that tension factor of the contraction. Speed of the contraction is where we get power. Power and strength are more related to performance goals. So if we think about tension on the overall movement of that lift, of that exercise, we're breaking down that muscle to further the hypertrophic response that we want to see out of the muscle to, again, allow it to regenerate after breaking down some of the muscle fibers, growing back fuller, growing back bigger in some senses. So again, when we're looking at how we train this particular muscle group, it's not overloading tons of weight and trying to rip off as many reps as possible. If we're doing 12 repetitions, we can't train 12 reps the same way that we would train 5 reps, right? So this idea of mitigating and really monitoring our rep ranges and our output and assuring that we're focusing on a smaller group of muscles rather than biomechanically improving biomotor abilities as a whole. So how we move as a whole, which could be seen as a performance marker, we're looking at making adaptations to the muscle, okay? And specifically the muscle. So this, what we talked about hypertrophy, taking it a step further, what we're really seeing at work here is sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. So essentially, sarcoplasm is composed of glycogen, it's composed of ions, water attracted by osmotic cellulites, contractile proteins, bunch of things that you shouldn't concern yourself with as much. Essentially, what you need to know is that within our bundle of muscles, within these myofibrils, which are composed of these contractile proteins, around and surrounding these bundle of fibers is the sarcoplasm. So if you look at a muscle, right, and you look at the fiber composition, the myofibrils that compose this overall muscle fiber, you're going to see the myofibrils, which are the individual strands that make up the muscle as a whole, and the sarcoplasm kind of fills in all of those myofibrils. So what we're looking at with this isolation approach to training, in a sense of bodybuilding and really trying to improve our aesthetics, with hypertrophy, you see sarcoplasmic hypertrophy occur, which simply means the muscle fibers are growing. So rather than seeing a predominance of essentially myofibers, right, or those contractile proteins that allow the muscle to contract at a higher speed, which would be associated with maybe powerlifting, right? How quickly you can get the bar up in your first pull. That's more of a myofibril hypertrophy or myofibril growth, because we're improving the contractility of the myofibril which makes up the muscle fiber. So this is getting into a lot of depth here. I want to kind of take it back real quick. With this isolation approach to training, you're seeing adaptations happen which are different from adaptations that occur in a performance sense. So really at a deep level here, there's some pretty significant changes that differ from performance metrics that we train, and some trainers, some coaches seem to intertwine without understanding the differences of. So again, when we're taking an isolation approach to training, we're focusing on aesthetics. We see sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, which essentially allows the muscle fibers to grow, which give that full larger appearance of the muscle, adding to that toned look that a lot of people are aspiring for as well. How many times do you want to hear people wanting to be toned for the summer? It's essentially a combination of improved body composition and sarcoplasmic hypertrophy. So take a step back, let you digest that for just a moment. Point blank, you guys, sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, it really lies in the realm of kind of, I would say, higher rep ranges with higher tension, longer tension produced, okay? So time under tension is a huge factor that allows you to mitigate load and mitigate intensity in any given training session. So simply put, the longer that you're holding a given weight, the more tension, the longer your muscle is under tension, your muscle can only hold and produce tension for so long. So if we're improving our capacity to withstand and produce tension, we're increasing our capacity for work, right? So in doing so, we're seeing a strengthening of those myofibrils, right, that we talked about. So we can see those adaptations occur outside of that performance training idea, but not nearly to the effect of doing performance training, and vice versa. If I can see body composition goals, I can get aesthetic goals out of playing sports, but point blank, if I'm focused on one versus the other, I'm going to see attributes and adaptations occur that are more in line with the specificity of which I'm training. Okay, so we talked about how this bodybuilding approach to training is really just kind of focusing on a smaller group of muscles. It's focusing on tension. It's in the realm of higher rep ranges with longer bouts of tension produced on the muscle to elicit a response that allows sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, which, as we now understand, attributes to muscle growth and tone and body composition goals. So when we increase our muscularity in our body, our body begins to use more calories for fuel. So if we understand how that now ties into our nutrition, that's what I'm going to be diving into next. Okay, so now that we discussed a bit of how we conduct ourselves in a training environment when we're focusing on aesthetic goals, we're now going to talk about the nutrition side of things, because we can't have one without the other, not when we're focusing on lowering our body fat percentage here. So I've thought a lot about how I want to approach this topic, because I've made a few attempts at basically extrapolating nutrition and what I believe are fair practices to achieve either body composition goals or lower the amount of gastrointestinal distress. That seemed to be long and drawn out and just overly complicated, and there's already enough of that in the industry. So I'm going to step away from that realm of things and try a different approach by simply stating this. If you're focused on aesthetic goals and you really want to lower your body fat percentage, increase your movement, right? In a physical side of things, we talked about that. Now, in a nutritional side of things, lower your consumption, right? So, let me expand upon it in this way. Most of you and most of the people that I train and that are my teammates, most of you that have aesthetic goals and have body goals don't actually know how much you're intaking throughout the day. So if you have no idea how much you're actually eating throughout the course of the day and you're not being mindful of the macronutrient breakdown that you're taking in and the caloric density of the food that you're taking in, as well as the timing, you may be impeding some of those aesthetic goals that you're setting out for. So there's been, throughout my experience, people that I've worked with, that it's simply just making sure that we start becoming more mindful of the mindless eating, right? So the mindless snacking, you may find yourself in front of a TV, you got a good show on, you know, Netflix is popping with all your favorite flicks, like, you're going to go through bouts of mindless eating if you're not careful. Some of these people that I've worked with, it's just a minor adjustment of keeping them busy or keeping them satiated enough to when they get to that point, they don't have those issues, or finding an alternative to have them snack on versus something like popcorn or chips. So when we're looking at nutrition, much like anything else, we have to be prepared, right? Same can be said with our training venture. If we aren't structuring our training and we don't go in with some sort of plan and understanding of how it ties into our bigger picture of how we acquire those goals, we're never actually going to hit any of those goals that we're looking to achieve, whether they're based in aesthetics or nutrition or performance. So we've really got to go in with a plan. And if you think about how this relates not only to any of these aesthetic goals or performance goals, but just your life goals, guys, you're going to change the way that you execute every single day. So I have a few resources that I think will for sure help all of you that are centering your goals this new year around aesthetics hit those goals. And that is MyFitnessPal. That's a big one. Super easy to use. I've used this predominantly with a good portion of my teammates when I first started. And it's a free app. Everyone pretty much knows about it. And it's really easy to use. And it helps get you going just with the simplicity of getting into the habit of tracking your training, tracking your water intake, which is way undervalued. We'll save that for later. But tracking your water intake and tracking your caloric intake. And it also gives you really thoughtful descriptions of macronutrient breakdown as well as micronutrient breakdown. So I really like that resource. Another one that's really going to help you when you're developing goals, which I want to just segue into goal setting, in SMART goal setting. Too many times, you guys, are you biting off more than you can chew? Please stop developing goals of dropping 30 to 50 to 100 frickin' pounds, whatever your outlandish expectations are, of dropping X amount of weight within an ungodly short amount of time, okay? Stop with that. You're going to hurt yourself, you're going to hurt someone else, and it's just going to be bad news all around, okay? So take the ego out of it, and let's approach things with mindfulness. So this next resource is called the Total Daily Energy Expenditure Calculator. This one really helps you develop a base for goal setting. This allows you to see with kind of an eagle's eye view of how you're activity influences the expenditure of calories throughout the day. So how many calories you're burning. And this can really help someone who's coming from a really sedentary background and help them see the steps necessary to progress into higher bouts of or longer bouts of activity. So I really like this one. I find that it helps a lot of newer people kind of understand how their activity influences their output when it comes to caloric expenditure. So it can really solidify some good habits early on when you're looking to, you know, improve your chances of staying the course when it comes to attaining your goals this new year. So that's just a couple of resources off the top of my head that I've used most commonly with some of my new teammates that come in fresh and are either looking to just start training or looking to do nutrition or looking to do both. So I find that those resources are really valuable in help people develop habits early on and stick with those habits and improve their intrinsic motivation so that they can carry on those habits throughout their life. So again, guys, just keeping it real simple here with nutrition. Not going into carbohydrate breakdown, protein breakdown, fat breakdown. Really, there are so many different approaches to weight loss. Bottom line, the thematic thing that they all share is caloric deficit. When you start allowing yourself to become confused by all of these different ways of achieving caloric deficit, you start falling into the hands of big business and fall to the hands of these companies that are marketing the keto diet, that are marketing the Atkins diet, that are marketing the vegan diet, that are marketing the vegetarian diet. These are all just renditions of people that have found a way to market a particular approach to caloric deficit as a means of weight loss. So real simple with nutrition, guys. Don't eat more than you burn. Okay, so we're going to refocus and talk about how we elicit adaptations that fall in line with performance attributes and performance capabilities that we may see for athletes in the realm of sport performance. So I look at this approach as incorporating more muscles in the body, to put simply. You want to improve not only some of these aspects of course, strength and hypertrophy that you would typically see in our aesthetic approach when we're focused on just improving our looks, but we're also going to be focusing on biomotor abilities. So what does that mean? That means your proprioception, your awareness in space, your ability to respond to a stimulus, whether it's agility or reaction. Think about how a wide receiver catches a football. They have their eye on the ball, and they're able to have such eye-hand coordination to a degree that they're able to basically pick the ball out of the air, right? And some with one hand, like OBJ. So these are not attributes that are God-given. These are not attributes that are, simply put, just untrained, right? Like, we've got to develop a training routine that transfers to that skill pertaining towards the sport. So I just mentioned football. I'll go ahead and kind of extrapolate that a bit. When we're looking at football, how we structure our training, we need to consider, and not just football, but any sport, what type of sport we're playing? What are the demands of the sport? So if the sport, like football, demands that if I'm playing lineman, I need to start in a down position where I'm, you know, in a split stance. I've got one hand on the ground, and I've got, you know, myself in a hunched position. We're going to be training a bit differently than someone who is a running back, right? Who's starting in a standing position or a half kneeling, or excuse me, a bent knee position. These are all different approaches to how we would train each of these athletes. And this is what becomes quite an extensive phenomena in the performance training realm, is how many different combinations of training that we can implement to elicit adaptations. Different from, or rather more extensive from, aesthetics. So there's a million different ways of how we can train running backs from, and how they differ from how we train a lineman, and or how we train a safety versus a linebacker. They all require separate but unique training approaches that are conducive to their overall performance, which is a necessity when we're thinking about the position they're playing. Really, when we're looking at improving our competitive nature, right? So if you're an athlete in high school and you're looking to improve your likelihood of, you know, win percentage in any given sport, you're going to want to understand the demands of your sport, not just what positions you're weak in, like I just mentioned, a lineman in a down position or a running back in a kneeling, or excuse me, bent knee position. These are all approached differently in how we want to train each of these athletes. The running back is going to be running. The lineman is not. So what do we need to change in our approach between these two individuals? The running back's going to be focused on speed and power, and the lineman is going to be focused on those things also, but with an emphasis on more strength, right? It's because they're holding the line. They're holding people in front of them. And not just strength, but endurance of strength. So we're looking at, you know, not just explosive power off the line, but how long can they hold that person in front of them to create that wall to protect the quarterback? These are all situational. These are all extremely in-depth in from a performance standpoint. And I just want you to understand, listener, that if you are centering your sights on improving your athletic performance, you need to start thinking about what the demands are of your sport. Going off of that, what energy systems are you exhausting in this particular sport? Is it something you're going to be competing for, you know, potentially hours on end? If that's the case, you're going to want to approach training with more of an emphasis on endurance, and increasing your capacity for work rather than your approach towards strength, which may be seen with someone like a football player, a track athlete, someone who's running 800 meters versus someone who's doing a 70-meter sprint. Both of those require separate and unique training approaches that are going to influence and particularly dictate their success in that competition. So performance training is increasing the biomotor capabilities of the individual. So how well can we move our body in space? How well can we react to stimulus? How well does our body move? So these are all different versus something like aesthetic goals, which is how our body looks. Okay, someone can look strong, someone can look fit and be total wash. I've seen this many times in the bodybuilding world. Most of those guys cannot do anything besides bench press, besides curl, besides deadlift. Like, they're tight. They don't move well. All of those things are, you know, performance metrics that we're going to focus in that particular modality of training. So let's take a step back. So far, what we're understanding is we're taking more of a total body approach when we're looking at training, when we're orienting our goals around how we improve in a sport or competition. I want to talk about nutrition just a little bit because I think that this is pretty easy when it comes to output of athletes, is quality over quantity. Quality of food is huge, you guys. And that doesn't mean that this doesn't apply to aesthetics, but quality of food plays a role in how you feel. And how many times have you potentially, I know myself, I've done this, eaten something that has disrupted your stomach and has now caused a hump for you to get over in the given training session or whatever it may be in your life. That uncomfortability alone can kind of throw off your mentality. So if we're talking about a championship game online, you know, we eat something like pizza that causes some gastrointestinal distress, we're obviously going to have an issue with that if we're, you know, trying to compete at a high level, and it may influence the outcome between first and second place. So there's a lot that ties into this here, and to put simply, like I did with nutrition when it comes to aesthetics, is we're taking that idea away from caloric deficit and now thinking about how we feel. How do these foods make you feel? And I don't mean emotional response in terms of comfort food. I mean, how do these foods make you feel in a sense of body preparedness, right? In the same way that I just described how somebody like myself, who may have eaten pizza before a championship match or a championship game, how does that make you feel versus eating something like an apple before that competition? Both have carbohydrates, both are a source of energy, and both provide fuel to the body, which is going to be cleaner, which is going to be longer sustaining, and which is going to be more conducive towards the goal at hand. Thanks again, guys, for tuning in to another episode of the podcast. We are in season 2 now, so looking forward in this new year, presenting more content to you and hopefully getting into some more insightful talks and just relaying some of the information that's being presented to us as fitness professionals in the industry. So I'm here to bridge that gap and be a catalyst for that information to help you navigate your fitness journeys and, if you're a fitness professional, navigate your careers. So thanks again, guys, for listening to the show. Hopefully I can continue to engage with you and expand our audience.